This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross. In her latest role, my guest, English actress Helen Mirren, is Queen Elizabeth I.
Well, gentlemen, I've come to hear you talk, and I trust you will watch me while I listen.
Your Majesty, we beg to raise the question of your marriage.
Well, so long as you do not come to me to complain about your wives, I am content.
Helen Mirren became widely known to American television audiences 15 years ago when she played Detective Jane Tennyson in the first Prime Suspect mystery series. She has a long list of stage, screen, and television credits and earned Oscar nominations for Best Supporting Actress for her performances in The Madness of King George and Gosford Park. Among her other films are The Comfort of Strangers, The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, The Mosquito Coast, White Nights, and Excalibur. The two-part miniseries Elizabeth I debuts Saturday on HBO. The film chronicles the 16th-century monarch's battles with Spain and her mortal conflict with her cousin, Mary Queen of Scots. But it also deals with Elizabeth's turbulent emotional life, including her relationship with the Earl of Leicester, played by Jeremy Irons. Well, Helen Mirren, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
You're playing Queen Elizabeth I in this new production. Now, of course, some great actresses have played this monarch: Bette Davis, Glenda Jackson, Judi Dench, Cate Blanchett. Did you look at their performances, or is that something maybe you wanted to avoid?
No, you know, it's not relevant, really. You know, your work is to find what you think this person is. And also, you know, it all begins with the writing. And it all depends what the vehicle is within which this Elizabeth lives, you know. So it's not remotely helpful to watch somebody else's work because it's in a different vehicle, it's different writing. You know, there are different, all kinds of different issues at play.
Can you think of anything in the reading that you did about Elizabeth that you thought gave you some, you know, emotional insight into this woman?
I think one thing in particular really affected me was reading that at one point she was so angry she actually passed out.
Really?
Yes. And I thought, wow, that's like really angry. I can't imagine being so angry that you literally pass out. And then, you know, you really got I got the impression of an incredibly tempestuous, emotional woman, where she was unafraid of her own emotions. She had no reason to be afraid of them. She could let them loose because she was a queen. She could do anything. She could cry, she could scream, she could throw shoes, she could shut herself away, she could, really play up, you know, as far as she wanted to without any kind of censure, really.
Well, I thought we should listen to a clip from Queen Elizabeth I in which you play the monarch. And the one I thought we would hear is where you, as Queen Elizabeth, learned that the Earl of Leicester, whom the Queen has had a long-running affair or flirtation with, she's learned that he is actually secretly married. He is played here by Jeremy Irons. And, of course, my guest, Helen Mirren, Elizabeth I. Let's hear her discover that her friend is actually married.
Oh, you son of a whore.
Your Majesty, you must know that...
Know what, my lord?
That I would never have taken a wife if there were but a chance you would smile upon my suit.
I never wish to see your face again.
My heart still runs on you, I swear it.
Be off before I hang you. I'm minded to hang you now. With my own hands, too.
Yes.
Get out of my sight! We forbid you access to our presence. You are no longer welcome at our court. Be gone, sir. Now.
And that's our guest Helen Mirren portraying Queen Elizabeth I in a new production that will be debuting on HBO. Jeremy Irons is there also in that scene as the Earl of Leicester. You know, what's interesting about listening to that scene is that we hear the Queen, when she loses control, actually use the word I in public, refer to herself in the first person singular, and then she realizes it, composes herself, and begins speaking in the royal we. You are no longer yes. welcome in our presence. Did you sort of have to become comfortable with a public and a private Elizabeth in developing this character?
Yes. I mean, that's very much what our piece is about, is the public versus and intertwined with the private. So, obviously that was, you know, what we were playing with all the time. It's very difficult to go behind the velvet curtains or the heavy oak doors of history, you know, and find out what that person was actually like in private, because obviously so much of what we read is very much either through contemporary writing that's flattering, highly flattering. No one quite, you know, certainly you wouldn't dare criticize the Queen. The most truthful writings that I ever read about her, you always came from ambassadors, foreign ambassadors who were sent to the English court and then wrote back to their kings or queens or whoever had sent them. And then they would actually tell the truth because they were not in fear of censorship, you know. Hmm. So those were the most sort of accurate descriptions of Elizabeth.
One of the things about doing it, portraying a 16th century queen is you wear a lot of stuff.
I mean, stuff, yes.
Stuff in your hair.
Couldn't be enough for me, I tell you.
Yeah, you
I
like
loved
that, huh?
All of that. Oh, loved it. Yes, it's great.
Well, I read that. Did you also wear contact lenses to tint your eyes?
Yes, I did. I noticed when I looked at all the portraits that her eyes were always very black, very dark. And although it was very fashionable to have white skin, the only descriptions that I could find of her that were maybe truthful actually described her as having rather sallow skin. So she wasn't this white-skinned, red, you know, rosy-cheeked person at all. She was, her red hair was natural. And then one of the ambassadors described her as having black eyes. And I thought this black-eyed look, which is very piercing, it's quite intimidating. If you know anyone with very dark, dark brown eyes, you know, it's quite a piercing, intimidating look it gives to their eyes. I thought that would be quite a good tool. So I thought he's probably historically accurate. So yes, I wore dark brown lenses.
Now, of course, it's interesting that in addition to this portrayal of Elizabeth I, you have just finished a production in which you play Elizabeth II, right, the current queen. Is that right?
Yes, I do. Yes, absolutely.
How would you compare the two? Is there any connection?
There's a big connection, you know. It was very interesting. Such completely different personalities. You couldn't get more extreme differences in personality. The Elizabeth I, very not governed by her emotions, far from it. She was governed by her sense of power and her sense of autocracy, but a much more emotional person. And this present queen, who's governed by an overriding sense of self-discipline, duty and sacrifice. But the thing that they absolutely have in common is this single-minded dedication and desire to be who they are. And I think they share that absolutely. And it's what makes both of them, I think, very mighty monarchs. And I think Elizabeth II will, as history travels on, will be looked back on as a very, very iconic and important figure in British history.
You know, you went into films in your 20s, late 20s, and then in the 70s, I read you sort of took a hiatus from a traditional acting course and joined Peter Brook's Experimental International Center of Theater Research, which involved, touring Africa and parts of the United States, performing in very small settings, California farm workers.
It says Achevez, in fact.
Right. What appealed to you about that?
It worked.
And then what did you get from that experience?
Well, you know, it was a part of my sort of my search, my holy grail, to try and be better. And having done a lot of Shakespeare in that formal theatre environment, I felt it was time to throw everything up in the air. And I was lucky enough to be around when Brook was just beginning that particular period of his life's work. And I joined for just for 1 year. So, yes, we travelled through Africa. We started in Algeria and went down to Nigeria, south of Nigeria, and then back up again, travelling in jeeps and working in just very, very small villages, never in any towns. And then we came to America and we worked with the Teatro Campesino and with other theatre groups in America.
Was this for you more a matter of developing your acting craft, and or was it a matter of personal or political growth?
Not political. So it was apolitical. I mean, I think it was personal. Yes, personal acting growth. Not personal growth as a person. Although, of course, it turned into a bit of that as well, because when you're challenged like that, and it was very, very challenging, difficult work, you are, you know, you do have to make some sort of personal growth, which I'm still in the process of learning from that experience now. But it was very much to discover other ways of acting. I don't know whether that I really actually learned anything in reality, except for conquering fear, maybe.
Well, and you got a tattoo out of it.
I did, in America. But, you know, when I got tattooed, I can't believe it's become fashionable. When I got tattooed, it's only Hell's Angels and gay sailors who were tattooed, you know. And it was actually then, it was very cool to have a tattoo because, you know, it gave you an instant in with very, you know, I was never afraid of walking down dark streets at night because anyone who was likely to attack me was probably likely to have a tattoo. And there's nothing people like better than to talk about their tattoos.
We're speaking with actress Helen Mirren. She plays Queen Elizabeth I in an HBO movie that will premiere soon. It is called Elizabeth I. I wanted to talk about another film for which you received a Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. That's Gosford Park, a film I don't know well because I've only seen it twice. It's wonderfully complex.
You've only seen it twice?
Yes, I've only seen it twice.
I know what you mean about that's the nature of Altman's movies, isn't it? Yes.
Right. There's so much happening that you could never quite get it all. I mean, this is one in which there's, a weekend party in a British estate in the 1930s. And the wonderful thing is that we see the world of the affluent, the middle-class people, and then also below stairs, their servants, which you occupy in this case. And I wanted to – thought we would listen to a clip from the film. This is – just to explain what's happening here. In this, you play the housekeeper of a wealthy man, Lord William Stockbridge, who hosts this party and is actually murdered in the course of it. And it turns out that when your character, Mrs. Wilson, was a young girl, she was one of many servants whom Stockbridge had sexually preyed upon. She bore a son which had been sent away to an orphanage, but which now many years later turns out returns to the estate as a valet of one of the guests. He recognizes his father and decides he's going to kill this man who had abandoned him. But your character, Mrs. Wilson, sees this coming and instead poisons Stockbridge first, so her son, in fact, can't be accused of killing him. And the scene we're going to play here is a memorable one in which you are discussing this with another servant, played by Kelly MacDonald. Let's listen.
But even if Robert is your son, how did you know that he meant to harm his father?
What gift do you think a good servant has that separates them from the others? It's the gift of anticipation. And I'm a good servant. I'm better than good. I'm the best. I'm the perfect servant. I know when they'll be hungry and the food is ready. I know when they'll be tired and the bed is turned down. I know it before they know it themselves.
Are you going to tell him?
Why? What purpose would it possibly serve?
What if they find out what happened?
Not much of a crime to stab a dead man, is it? They can never touch him. That's what's important, his life.
And your life?
Didn't you hear me? I'm the perfect servant. I have no life.
And that's our guest, Helen Mirren, in the film Gosford Park. She's speaking there with Kelly MacDonald. A wonderful scene. I wonder if you could tell us a little about making that.
Yeah, it's a lovely piece of writing, isn't
it? Well, that's what's interesting, I think. You know, a lot of actors love to be with Altman because, I mean, his reputation is that of a lot of improvising and free-flowing. I mean, this is you've come from, you know, performing a lot of Shakespeare. What was it like to work with Altman?
It's a bit of a misnomer, really, that, you know, Altman is all about improvisation. That's not actually true. He choreographs very precisely. You know, he loves the text, and the text is important. But what he does do is he has everybody mic'd all the time. And so as important as the visual story is the sound story in an Altman movie. And because you're mic'd, everything you say, and sometimes you do improvise it, all actors do, you know, those little moments of improvisation can be used. And then, of course, the way he shoots is very extraordinary, and it creates this improvisational look to the movie. But in reality, it's very, very carefully choreographed and very precise, in fact. That was my experience, anyway.
Yeah, what do you mean by the way he shoots, creating that feel?
Well, I mean, it's a sort of technical thing, but, for example, he very often shoots with two cameras, and the two cameras are often moving simultaneously, which is sort of unheard of when you're shooting a movie. And you'll never know if you're in close-up or if you're in a wide shot or if it's a mid-shot while you're playing the scene. You don't know what kind of shot you're in. So you can't become conscious in that particular way. It's a particular kind of technique. That's very visually, it creates a sort of rather extraordinary thing. And also for the actors, you play it almost like a play. You play the whole scene through, not quite knowing when you're on camera, if you're off camera, if you're in close up. So it's very individual. And I loved the way he worked. I thought it was amazing.
When you saw the final product, was it what you expected it to be?
It was more than I expected it to be. I thought it was fantastic. It had because of his way of shooting, it gives the story an inner life somehow, and a sort of and that sense of naturalism that you're talking about. I thought it was great. I loved it, and I loved the fact that he was very, very keen that all the details of that sort of a household were correct, you know, that the way the spoons were kept and the way the pantry looked and all of those technical details, visual details, had to be absolutely right. And we had on set with us all the time, we had a very old man and an old woman who had worked in that sort of a household as advisors to tell us what people would do and wouldn't do.
Well, Helen Mirren, in 1991, you had a role with which you've become much identified when you played Jane Tennyson in the Prime Suspect series. I thought we'd hear a little bit of the first Prime Suspect series, and this one is one in which you have been a district chief inspector. That's the rank where you should be able to handle a murder investigation, but the men in the department have found ways not to let you actually get an investigation to cover. And in this case, one person who has begun a major investigation, one of the officers has died, and you've come in to assert your right to get involved in this major police work.
This may not be the right time, sir, but under the circumstances, I'm not quite sure when would be the right time. I'm offering to take over the murder investigation. I don't have to tell you that I am qualified to handle this investigation, and that I have been waiting for... Well, I don't have to tell you how long. 18 months. And in that time, I've had to handle more paperwork than I did at Reading for my whole 5 years dealing with sex cases. I know DCI Shefford was at a crucial stage of the investigation.
I have to see his wife this afternoon. Don't expect me to make any decisions now. This is not the right time.
Well, when is the right time? Look, I am the only officer of my rank who has continually overstepped, sidestepped, whatever. Just give me the chance to prove that I can
do it. You don't have to prove yourself to me. Let me think about it.
Well, that's not enough, Michael. I'm getting sick to death of this so-called Metropolitan Police survey being thrown at me. So, all right, apparently 90% of the time the general public would prefer a male officer. But until one of us gets a chance to prove that that survey is a biased, outdated load of old...
A man who I respected highly died right there. And now, Inspector, is not the time to thrust your women's rights down my throat. I'll get back to you.
Thank you, sir.
That was my guest Helen Mirren playing Jane Tennyson in the original Prime Suspect series. Acting in that scene with her was John Benfield. You know, a lot of the fans of that series, me included, could hardly imagine anybody but you in that role. Did it seem like a perfect fit when you read it?
I don't know about that. I mean, I did recognize that I was jolly lucky to have it, you know, because it's so rare, even to this day, incidentally, that a woman drives the narrative of a drama. You can have very good female roles and things, but rarely are they actually driving the narrative. And then it was even less likely, especially on television or anywhere. You know, that was what fascinated me, the fact that it was a female character driving the narrative. The fact that it was a police thing and Jane Tennyson and all the rest of it didn't really impinge upon my consciousness. I just saw that it was a, you know, really a lovely, complex role.
Did you learn any gestures or vocal mechanisms that you put into that character? Do you recall?
The only thing was that I, you know, a policewoman who was quite high up, said she never folds her arms. I thought that was a very interesting. Police are very, very into body language. They can read you like a book. The good detectives, they understand body language extremely well. It's how they do their job a lot of the time, and she said, "Don't fold your arms." Because folding your arms is, it looks, you think you're being strong. And I laugh now. I often see, you know, there's big posters of women playing police women, and they've always standing there with their arms folded, thinking, oh, this looks powerful and strong. Not, you know, folding your arms is a defensive action, and much more powerful is to stand with your arms relaxed by your side, open, you know, ready.
There have been six, I believe. Is there going to be a seventh?
I'm in the process of doing the last one right now. The last one. I think it's seven. I've lost count. Yeah.
This would be the seventh. Why the last one?
Because I think it's time to stop. I did stop for 7 years, actually. I said no, it was time to not do it for a while anyway. I felt I was maybe in certain people's minds a little too identified with it. I felt that if I was knocked over, you know, the headline would read, Jane Tennyson dies. so I thought I'd better, you know, try and extricate myself from that. And so I didn't do it for 7 years. And then I felt, you know, it is a wonderful role. And that the best thing about doing that is I get to work with really good writers, really good directors, and really good actors. I have the pick of the best in Britain. So, you know, you don't turn your back on that too easily. So I did one more, thinking, well, if it was not successful, that's it, end of story. And it was hugely successful. It was really, really well received. So I thought I'd do one more, the last one, which is what I'm doing now.
Well, Helen Mirren, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much.
Actress Helen Mirren. She stars in a new HBO miniseries, Elizabeth I, which premieres Saturday.